Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield. And this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 247 of this, the Ministry of Arts podcast. Today, I'm going to go straight in and tell you about this week's guest, Danielle Tomlinson. She's an ex-Olympic level swimmer whose career got paused because of the pandemic. And like many others, because she had so much time on her hands, it gave her the opportunity to reignite an old flame, painting. Being a lover of wildlife, she started experimenting using images of friends' pets, and with her very loose style and bold and colourful palette, these paintings very quickly became a hit. So much so that after we came out of the lockdowns, the future that Danielle had envisaged in the pool had changed. So as her sales grew, as did her confidence. So much so that as we was recording this podcast, she was actually preparing for her first appearance at the Other Art Fair, which, if you speak to anyone that's done it, it's an amazing experience. So come and join me as I spoke to ex-swimmer Danielle Tomlinson, who's making quite a big splash in the art world. Oh, that's terrible.
Good morning, madam. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all.
Got those
that's a pretty
good
studio you've got there.
Thank you. Yeah, I moved in here probably in May. I was in the same building before then, but then before then, I was just in the back garden. So yeah, in 3 years, three studios. Maybe I'm a commitment. I've got a commitment issue, but I just like keeping it fresh and having a new space. And yeah, while you can, you might as well enjoy it. So you never know what's going to happen.
Is the size of your studio growing with yourselves?
Yeah, that's kind of it. And the thing is, the last one I had was big enough, but I just kind of got to the point where I am, it's quite like, I'd say it's luxury, as in like you've got your heating, you've got security, you've got other people in the building, and then the next move after that's going to be a warehouse. So I was like, I'm going to make the most of it while I'm here before I need some like ridiculously big place. So yeah, that's why when this one came up I was like, right, I'm taking it, because then at least then it's kind of a half step to what they then need to go to. But no, it's dead good, like lots of light. I've got no lights on at the minute, and it's like windows either side. Nice. Big high ceilings, like can't really complain. I'm from Leicester, so I'm like right in the middle.
And that's where your studio is?
Yeah. I know, you wouldn't believe it, would you? But it took me ages to find this place, because like Leicester's not very like artsy, or there's like random warehouses, but other than that, it's like it's quite hard to find a space. So when this one came up, I was like, this is in Leicester, really?
I was like, nice, I'll take that. Gems, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't even know this existed. But yeah, once you're in, and yeah, you then find out of all the other cool places you didn't even know existed. It's all right, okay. Nowhere online.
You grew up, Leicester.
Yeah, I'm really boring. I was born in Leicester. I've not left Leicester. I went to uni just down the road, so I'm like, yeah, a bit boring in that sense.
There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing
at all. You've got a London accent, haven't you?
Yeah, well, Essex.
Essex, yeah. So are you in Essex at the minute? I saw the London postcode.
I still live in the same town that I was born in.
Yeah. I like my roots. Like, I like my friends, I like my family. And I get asked this a lot, probably you as well. Oh, will you ever move? And it's like, if I had a reason to, yeah, but not at the minute. Like, I'm quite happy where I am.
You don't want to just move because that's what some people do.
Yeah. Like, run off. A lot of people in Leicester, they just go run off to London, and then it's like they hit 28 and they're like, okay, I better buy a house. Oh, wait, I've got no money to buy a house because I've been living in London. It's like,
That's what holidays and day trips are for, isn't it? To get a different environment. You don't have to go and live there, do you?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I'd love to live in Cornwall. And then you actually live in Cornwall and then things, it's just normal. So, I'm always under that. The grass isn't always greener, guys. Like, it is fine, like, staying. But, yeah, like, I'd say, like, maybe the opportunity arose to, like, live somewhere for, like, 6 months, I'd take it. But I'd always settle, like, near my family and stuff. So, that's the long term. Like,
always go and rent a studio for 2 months in Newcastle, you know, Suburbs or whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's
having
it. Like,
working, I think, holiday.
Yeah, that's the beauty of, like, sort of what we do, is that you never know what's around the corner. And you can just go, we can work anywhere. So we can just go and rent, like, a studio in Tuscany for six months if you can. And like, I know loads of artists who sort of do it as well. And it's it's the dream. That's the goal anyway, to like rent somewhere like in like this, like, I don't know, South Africa, wake up every morning, hear the birds. Oh, I'm just gonna go paint some wildlife. Like, that's the dream, but long way to go yet. So
painting the wildlife in the safari surroundings sounds ideal until you've got a pride of lions creeping up behind you.
Yeah. Or you've got to bring it all home for a show. That's the other thing as well, isn't it? Right, you've just got to ship all these elephants back home to London to get this. But no, it's I love it. All my work's getting bigger and bigger as well. And I like working. I don't know about you, but I love working on a really large scale. I can imagine because you're quite fine detail. It might be like really fun, but also really, really time consuming, like mentally draining. But I just love going like super big, and I quite like doing like life size animals. So, yeah, that's the dream, like to be somewhere in nature and just paint life size animals one day.
Did you have art in the home growing up?
No. So like my mum can draw. Not like particularly like amazing. My dad can't. So they always pushed us as we were kids to like be creative. And I think that's like something I'm really grateful for. They've always been like, try everything, like nothing's off limits. I know a lot of people get pushed out, like just sort of disencouraged from like the arts and stuff while they're at school. But I remember I picked it for a GCSE option and an A-level option. And my parents were like, they always were like, if you like it, you're going to do well in it. So just like, and I always remember that. And I'm so grateful for them for saying that. So yeah, I've always done art growing up, like from a toddler to like a teenager, like it's always been there. So, and alongside like when I was doing sport as well. So it's been good. I've never really stopped doing it. But then obviously I went to university and that's kind of when things like stopped. But then I was like, right, I need some money. That's kind of how it came about. I love pets. I'll paint people's pets. And then that's my hobby while I was at uni, and swimming. So yeah, I've kind of always done it. Like, not really had a break from it either. I don't really, when it's your passion, you don't want to, do you? Did you find art in prison, or did you like it when you were growing up as well? Because I know everyone's like really different. Like at school, like a lot of the lads didn't like it.
I wanted to go into the computer class and do a computer course.
Yeah.
So I was doing a long time. I was doing 14 years.
Yeah.
It was a lot of drugs I got caught with.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll straighten myself out, do a computer course. And the only way, or it was a really long waiting list, but what you could do, if you went into the education department, onto a different course, you could move sideways across. So I would have jumped about 60 places just by going into education.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
And there was a few different courses, and I thought, I'll go into the art one, because at school you could always have a mess about and a doss in the art class. And it just so happened that there was an amazing tutor who, if anything, because he was such a nice guy, I was trying to sort of, I was concentrating on the art and not messing about out of respect for him, you know, because he was such a nice guy. And he was showing me all these ways to draw, and it was, I couldn't do it. I'd never drawn. Mm. But then one way that he showed me just connected up here rather than by my hand. And then I thought, that one works. And then I sort of, it was like that. And then I'd done, we were supposed to draw an eye from this, from a picture in a magazine. Mm. And there's an actor called Stephen Burkhoff, he's a Cockney actor, and he's sort of a bit gnarly and grimy, you know. And I'd done his eye, and it looked that good. I took it away over the weekend to see if I could do the other eye and then the nose and a mouth. And I walked in, I showed the tutor this portrait that I'd drawn. And Danielle, the look on his face, it was, I mean, I never had a dad growing up, but it's that look of a proud.
Oh, yeah.
I'd never had that before. I had a bit of a shock growing up. Danielle, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'd never sort of had someone look at me like he looked at me with a bit of pride in his eye. And
it
was something that I'd done, because I'd been a criminal for years. It was something that didn't have a victim, where I wasn't doing anyone any harm. Where it was just something from me. And I'd never had that before.
Yeah. I think that's like
to please him, you know.
Yeah, I can completely like agree with that. Like, same here. When I used to swim and stuff, like, you kind of look at your coach and you're like, not only do I believe in myself now, I've got someone else believing in me as well. And that's a really nice feeling, and like making not only yourself proud but other people proud around you, being like, yeah, I can do this. Like, and I think that's the importance of having like important mentors growing up, because I luckily had a great art teacher at school. She was strict, but she was good, and everyone respected her, and no one really, it's funny you said that, because in our other art class you'd always hear people messing about, but in our art class no one messed about. So it's like I had that same teacher from year seven to sixth form, and I'd never had another art teacher. So I've always been like, when I was in art, I focused and I enjoyed it and I did it and I learned loads. And she was really encouraging as well, and just like, really wants to push you in different areas. And a bit like you said, like, something just clicks. And it's a beautiful thing when you look at different artists. We're all kind of similar in some ways, like just in the way we think, the way we talk. But like, what we produce can be so different. And it's like, well, that's, I think when you go to art class maybe at school and you don't click with art, that could just be it. You're not doing the right kind of art.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, people don't pursue it then creatively in the future, even if they do enjoy it, because they're like, oh, I weren't very good at that, or nothing really clicked. I don't really know what kind of art to make. And I think it's like, just try everything. And then, that's like, I think that's what you do it. I don't know, because I've not been like traditionally educated. I think when you go university, they make you try everything, and then you home in on like sort of what you like and what speaks to you. But
yeah, that'd be more of a foundation.
I think that's it. I'm not completely aware of what gets taught, but I think that's another good thing. I'm quite grateful for that as well, because you've not got those sort of like pillars of like confinement. I find that when
six of one, half dozen of the other, I've found that it's either you've got a freer focus, the focus is yours, you're not constrained by any other rules and influences too much. But on the flip side to that, I feel that with that university, not even education, but with going to university, it does give you it gave me a bit more of a streamlined focus to where I wanted to go. So it didn't narrow it in, but it narrowed it in to where I wanted to go.
Yeah, so, and I suppose it's one half dozen the other. Yeah, when you've got sort of like somebody helping you along as well and being like, oh, you're really good at that, or do you enjoy this, that would be, that's something I sometimes struggle with. Like when I was finding my style, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's looking, like, I don't know if that's trying to get across what I want to get across, I, like, blah, blah, blah. And that was quite a hard thing for me. But yeah, in some other ways, I'm like, I'm glad I didn't have one. But then in other ways, it's like really respected to have one as well. So yeah, like you said. It's one of those, isn't it? So
you touched on when we were talking about influences and people giving you that little kick, you mentioned about your swimming coach. Tell us a little bit about your swimming life,
it's gone now. So I retired. It sounds weird. I retired at 21, which is quite funny.
Hang up your flippers.
Yeah. Hung them up. The thing is, I'm still young enough to be doing it now. In the event I did, I could go up to about 28. So who knows? Might have a comeback. Probably not, though. But yeah, so I swam competitively from the age of 11. To 21. I like went to the Olympic trials, so it's essentially like when we're going to Rio, the swim, like Swim Britain, GB Swimming will put on an event for all the best swimmers, and you've got to qualify to get in it, and then the top two will go to, like, and they'll take them to the Olympics, or they take them to Commonwealth or Worlds. So I've qualified, so you kind of got like county, Midland standard, nationals, and then you've got British qualifiers, and that's where I was. So I was teetering on the edge of sort of like the Olympic standard. Well, essentially you are Olympic standard if you get the qualifying times do it. Seems a little bit, I'm always really bad at explaining it because there's no sport that's kind of like structured like this, but I was like teetering on the edge of like between Olympic standard and, you know, British qualifiers, and I finaled in the women's 100 meter breaststroke for Rio. So I didn't obviously go to Rio, but I think I was 19 at the time, and yeah, I was really ill and I'd still PB'd, and I was always so, I always look back at that. I was on antibiotics at the time and I just went and swam because I was like, there's no way I'm missing on this opportunity just for the you know, just to do it. And I always look back and I'm like, oh, I've made a personal best on antibiotics. Imagine what I would have done. Even if it was 1 second, like, yeah, but it was really good. And then I got put on like the Target Tokyo list, which is just a list of swimmers to look out for and to keep an eye on for Tokyo. But yeah, before then, I'd already quit. COVID hit. I took that opportunity to just take time off swimming, and I just never went back. I think when I went to university, the coach I had there, first coach ever, I didn't get on with. And I think that's the importance of a mentor. And especially when you're trying to do something to your fullest. With swimming, you're training like 8 times in the pool a week, 3-4 gym sessions. Like, it's really mentally straining. And if you don't get on with your coach, you're not gonna enjoy it. You do need external motivation. It's not just all internal, especially when it's so grueling. So yeah, I didn't get on with coach, and I just lost the love for it. Really sad to say.
So passionate about it. He was obviously so good at it.
Yeah, it's a really strange thing to say. So I was like, oh, did you get injured? And it's like, well, we're all, as swimmers, we're all injured anyway. We're always carrying an injury. So I had a lower back injury and a shoulder injury. I didn't use it as an excuse, but I kind of was, I'm not loving swimming at the minute. Rehab's quite hard. I don't really have anywhere. The problem with when you get to sort of like 19, 20 and you're at uni, unless you're swimming in a uni team, you've really got nowhere else to go. So like, I can't really go back to my home club, which is City of Leicester, because they're all 16-year-olds and I'm not turning up to a training session with no one to talk to. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it was kind of like, you kind of get pushed into a corner. You're like, I did want to carry on swimming, just not there. But I was like, well, I've worked out what makes me unhappy as the coach, but I've got nowhere else to go. So I kind of got forced into a corner, and I needed something else. And that's when I really lent into my art. And obviously COVID hit, so there wasn't many jobs going anyway. And I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to put all my eggs into this basket now and really go for it. And yeah, that's what I did. 3.5 years later, it's still going. So just got to keep doing that every day.
So it was...
No early mornings now, though.
So it was the freedom that lockdown enabled you to readjust.
Yeah.
Look at what you can do in this meantime while everyone was locked down. And yeah. Just decided to take up a previous hobby or passion.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, because everyone's lives were on pause. So I didn't really feel like I fully left swimming because everyone wasn't swimming. Yeah. So it was like, okay, I can go back if this doesn't work out, but it is going to, I always think it, if I'm going to put my mind to something, it's going to work out. And yeah, like COVID, I was like, right, let's just see how this art goes. I started just creating things just for the fun of it. And then I had like a couple of pieces and I was like, I think I'm going to try and sell these. People had been buying my artwork, like pen portraits in the past. And I was like, no reason why I can't sell them. And yeah, next thing you know, I put all my savings into a marketing course just to learn how to like sell things online. And yeah, next thing I know, I'm doing it. And then it all snowballs. But yeah, definitely COVID gave me that time to focus in on what I was doing, how I wanted to do it. And yeah, just practicing. I think that's a really big thing. Like when I first started, I wasn't very good. And now I look at it and I'm like, wow, in 3 years, I've come that far. And yeah, I was saying this again to my parents, funnily enough, at dinner last night. I was like, looking at some artwork up on the wall, and it was mine. And I was like, that's really like, that was me when I was 18. And look how far I've come from there. But yeah. That was good when I was 18. And it's like, yeah, it's just practice, isn't it? Literally, I tell people all the time, it's just practice. But yeah, so yeah, that's kind of like the story.
Well, what you're saying there, that's what got me to want to be an artist, is because I was doing this art course for about four or five weeks before I put my name down for the actual course. I saw how far I'd come from when I first started trying to draw. And it was it was genuinely like a 6-7 year old, you know.
Yeah.
And then I saw how far I'd come in like 4, 5, 6 weeks. And I was like, if I've come that far in that short time, I've still got a few years left. Imagine what I can do at the end of that. There was already a little flame inside me that was burning, you know. I've never been a creative, but I was well aware that if you had that little bit of fire for something, that got it going.
As a child, did you have that, or did you not even get exposed to sort of the arts and stuff?
I'd never been to a gallery. The only artwork I used to admire, and I didn't even see it as art at the time, was album covers.
Never picked up any brushes or anything like that?
Nothing at all.
Wow. So going into this program, this course, you kind of were like, oh, wow. That might have been something you would have been really interested in as a child, and you just didn't get exposed to it. So it's that little... sort of childhood spark that's really quite nice, actually. And you found that at a later date. I like that. That's really cool.
During lockdown, you discovered or you reignited your little flame
for creativity,
visual arts. Obviously, at some point, you thought it could be a viable option. And you took that course for a marketing course. Was it at the end of that you thought, I can now sell my work?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I kind of thought when I did it, I was like, right, I'm a bit, I've got this like sort of like risk risk delusion. Like, I don't really mind taking a risk because I'm always like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen?
Nice.
I'm living at home. I've got great parents who support me, and I'll just go get a job. Like, I'll just go work in a supermarket or go do anything. It doesn't matter. That was the worst outcome. So when, and it was, to be fair, it was quite an expensive course. It was every single penny I had. So basically all the money I earned from doing pet portraits, I put in a savings account, and I spent all that money on this course. It was £1,100. And it was a big chunk of money. And I was like, right, well, that all of that's going to either be gone or it's going to pay off. But imagine if it pays off. Yeah. And that's kind of like how I did it. And after the course, I was kind of like, it was weird, actually. It's kind of like really straightforward things that we'd all be able to do and consider. But like, maybe we just, because they're so obvious, we just wouldn't like consider it. And then after that, I then kind of got the itch for like just marketing in general. And I just started like YouTubing. Like, there's this guy called Rory Sutherland, and like the psychology of like selling and marketing. And it's like, wow, that's really interesting. It confirmed all the points that I did in my marketing course. And like, I think the most important thing is like, why do you do it? And let people know why you do it. And like, I've got a massive passion for animals. So why I create my art is purely because of that. I want to scream about endangered species. Letting people know that's why you're doing it. Almost like creates that connection and that trust. And like, they're like, well, I've loved animals since a child. I can relate to this person on an emotional level. And I actually quite like her artwork as well. And that's kind of how it like happened and how the sales started happening. I'd have like one-to-one chats with them on like Facebook Messenger after I've posted a picture of my artwork into a group, like just an animal lovers group or something. And they'd be like telling me about like why they love the piece, why it means something to them, and sort of all those emotional markers. That's kind of how it started and how I got selling. Sadly, I don't really get to have those as much of those conversations anymore. But it was really nice getting to know the people who were buying your artwork and why they were buying it. And that helps as well, like move forward in the future. It's all sort of like data collection. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, like that works.
Daniel, what you were saying there about, you don't have so much time to speak to the people about your work.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because you don't need that as much anymore. I'm sure at the time you may have had the internal confidence, but you didn't have you wasn't wholly confident about your work, how it's being seen by others. And when you've got these virgin people, not virgin, when you've got these, who don't know you, you know, because your family's always going to say how brilliant your artwork is.
Yeah.
Coming from strangers, you know, who have no ulterior motive other than liking your work.
That's
your confidence and your ego, you know, that's a positive thing.
Yeah, that's it. And I think as well, it's like not only being aware of people who love your work, there's also going to be people who don't like your work as well. And having that confidence to be like, I don't mind that. There's loads of artwork I don't like. It's nothing personal. Exactly. And just kind of being a bit more worldly on it. And also there's so much more of me out there now. When I first started, like barely any pictures of me, barely any like podcasts or anything like that, any like sort of news articles. Whereas now, I guess people, I don't need to have those conversations as much anymore because people know exactly who I am. I've kind of built that trust. Like, I am legit. I'm not some like random AI person on the internet who's like making up all these artworks. And I think that's helped as well, just really getting myself more out there. Like, it's not nice when you have to, you know, think, all right, I've got to go talk to the Instagram again and like grab your phone and do it. But actually, over time, it becomes less cringy and becomes more normal. And the only person cringing is yourself anyway. Yeah. Everyone else is like, wow, that's what she does in a day or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, like people like to see it. The people are like, oh, yeah, can you do more days in the life? And you're like, yeah, I can do that. Like, if you want to see that. And that, I guess that's why I don't need those conversations. But I've got the other art fair in about a week's time, which is at London, in London. And
nice.
Yeah, I've never done anything in person before. So I'm like, that's a new thing for me. So yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about that and like actually seeing people's reactions in real life to my work. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be fine. Like, it is what it is. But Yeah, it's going to be a new experience, that's for sure.
Well, have a look through the back catalogue, Danielle, because we've got loads of artists who are regular showers at the Other Art Fair.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
I've got the founder of the Other Art Fair on there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right. Cool. That's all cool. Yeah, I'm hoping. Apparently, it's a really nice community and everyone's really chatty and nice. Brilliant. So I'm looking forward to meeting everyone. And yeah, just as well, just like having something physical for people to come and see, because I think that's a big thing. A lot of people are like, oh, are you with any galleries? I'm like, no, I'm just independent. Like, I'm in my own little studio in Leicester online. And it's like, I've actually got somewhere now for people to come and see my stuff. So yeah, that's cool. I'd like to do more stuff like this, I think. So yeah, we'll see how it goes though, before I make any promises. So I said, how much like spare should I bring? And they're like, oh, 2 to 3 pieces. Don't worry about a gap. But they're like, if you've got multiple gaps, then you need to fill it. And I was just like, right. So what I've done is I'm getting some prints done that are going to be framed as well. So worst case, worse, I pop them on the wall, just because I just don't have enough time to like paint any. I had to paint, I've got a big orange T-Rex behind me. I had to paint that like a couple of weeks ago, just so I had like something up on the wall. Yeah. But yeah, you get told about it literally like 6 weeks before the event. And you're like, right, sick. Okay, well, those commissions that I had planned for then, they're not going to be done. So I had to like tell my clients about that. And then it's like, right, better get some artwork ready. So yeah, it was a really quick turnaround. And I know that they do it in like LA and Chicago as well. And one of my mates has just got into the LA one. And he was like, yeah, 6 weeks and you go to LA. I'm like, I thought London was bad enough. No. Never mind sorting flights out and transfers for your artwork there. So it'll be fun.
When are you at the Other Art Fair?
So it's the 7th to the 10th of March. So next Thursday to Sunday.
Danielle, what piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, do you think? To you or to others?
I would say I'm just currently nearly finished. They're called the Mokopogo brothers, and they're two lions. I've really gone into the story here. There were 6 lions in this coalition in South Africa, in the National Kruger Park, and they just absolutely sort of destroyed the ecosystem, as in like they killed, I think in 1 year, up to 100 lions, just trying to dominate the area. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was more than this, but I think they like controlled over like, I think it was like 300 acres. It was something ridiculous. Don't quote me on that. But I was really getting into sort of like the brutality of like nature and how harsh it can be. And I was like, I found these guys. And then I looked into the members, and there was 2 members called Mr. T, funnily, because he had a mohawk. And the other one was Kinky Tail. And they broke off from this coalition. They tried to take over the alpha male and it didn't work. And those two were the most aggressive out of all 6. And they would sort of kill their own brother's cubs, eat them. And I was like, I've got to paint these guys. They're just absolutely like sort of the epitome of like wild, and it's not even sadistic, it's just like their innate nature, and it's like I've got to paint them. So that's what I'm doing at the minute, and it's like nearly 2 meters high, it's really big, and they're just walking towards sort of the camera. And I'd say that's my most sort of emotional piece, and I think that's why it's taking me so long, because I just want it to be perfect. I'm really strongly attached to that one at the minute. And I don't know if I'll post it straight away so I can enjoy it a little bit longer in the studio. But that's probably definitely the one. And it's a new one, which is weird. So normally that you'd look at the ones in the past fondly, but I'm kind of looking at this one. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to sell it. But obviously I will. But I really love the story behind it. So yeah, it's cool.
If there was you and 5 other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, as in like who I would want there?
Yeah.
I think it's definitely changed, but I love Pitchy and Avo. They're a pair of Spanish artists who like paint super colourful Greek sculptures. and like they do it in like really modern areas in like Barcelona. Yeah. I really like that because like Leicester's full of graffiti, so I love that. I would say I can't pronounce his last name, Jack Bangaru. He's just come on the scene really, I'd say within the last year. And he's a German artist, and yeah, I love, again, use of anything colourful, I love. Sophie T, I like her, I really respect her journey, and I think she's done amazing without any galleries. Gosh, who else? I'd love to speak to Damien Hirst. Like, I know that's so cliche, but like I'd love to throw a few questions to him. Jessica Zoob, just because I studied her growing up. And I don't know who the fifth one would be. Run out. No, weirdly, no traditional, really. No, like, sort of the greats. I respect their artwork.
I don't think that matters. It's what influences isn't it? So
yeah,
it can be anything from, I don't know, an old master to someone who you've just seen doing graffiti on the street, you know?
Yeah, so, literally.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be someone of stature.
Yeah, and I think that's it. Like, I think because I've obviously lacked that education as well, I'm probably not exposed to it. But when I'm obviously doing my own research and looking at artists and stuff, I look at the artists that I'm like, I love colour, as you can tell. So anything colourful, I'm like drawn to, like sort of a fly on a lamp. So for me to be like, oh, I don't know, someone who does black and white, I'd be like, I love it, I respect it, but like, I'm like, I don't know, I'm a bit like a magpie with colour. So it's like, that would be out of character for me to do and choose one of them. But yeah, I'd say that would be the group. I just love their use of colour. I love their journeys. Yeah, there'd be some questions I want to ask. And I think, yeah, just like, what's your biggest lesson that you've learned? I think that's always the question, I think.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I know your journey's only just started, but if you wasn't an artist, what would you like to do?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I feel like I've got the dream career already. So I'm always like, I think I spoke to somebody the other day, they're like, oh yeah, I'd love to be a professional golfer. It's like the dream. Like, wouldn't you love that? And I was like, no, not really. I think my career is the best. I'd like to be in conservation. I wanted to be a vet growing up, but I wasn't very good at maths. I was very average. So yeah, it'd be like a conservation vet and helping like the rhinos and the lions and like tagging them and even like sort of the ocean animal, like obviously the marine life as well. Yeah, conservation vet. I think that's what I would be if I was clever enough.
Nice. It's something I was thinking as you was talking earlier. What processes have you brought from your athletic career into your art career?
Processes, do you know what? I'm not as routined as I used to be. I'm not as organized as I used to be. Probably because I don't have to be. I think if you give my brain a bit of leeway, it just takes a mile. So it's like, but I'd say I still have the drive there. I still have the motivation. I'm really big on goal setting. So I guess I've brought that from there. And I think goals, they say if you write a goal down, you are 70% more likely to achieve it by just writing it down. So that's something I do quite often. I do like sort of a yearly goal. And then obviously you've got your five short-term, long-term, medium-term, maybe your monthly goals. I've got weekly goals. And I just think it keeps me on track and it keeps me organized as well. So I definitely say that's the most useful process that I've brought from swimming is goal setting. Other than that, it's kind of just qualities I gained that I think are quite useful in the career. I'd say that's about it.
Did you used to go swim like really early in the morning?
Yeah, like I was quite bad with like my tendons weren't great. That's what I mean. I've always been one to sort of go against the grain a little bit. And to the annoyance of my coaches, I would skip quite a few sessions. But yeah, morning training was the one I would skip if I was to do it.
What was it, like six, seven?
Oh, no. I used to wake up at like 4:15 and like drive to Loughborough and then get in the pool for 5 a.m. and do a 2-hour session and then go straight to uni or straight to school. And I was doing that at school as well. So a little bit later, 4:30, and then we'd be diving in at 5 a.m. Yeah. And it's just, do you know what? Standing over that edge of the pool, knowing how cold it is in there. It's like an ice bath. It's like that ice bath thing before it was even a thing. Like, I used to do it every morning.
You're not getting into your studio at 5 a.m.
No way, no. I'm quite like normal now. I just start at like sort of 9, 9:30. I always say to myself, as long as you're in there before 10, it's fine. Because sometimes I go, like, I'll do exercise in the morning, or have a bit of a lazy morning, do admin in bed. Like, we're all guilty of it. And luckily, like, I'm able to do that because I don't have a boss. But yeah, I say like 9, 9:30, I arrive in the studio. And then some days I just can't paint. I don't know if you're like that, where you're like, I need to paint, but like, I'm just not in that zone.
Yeah, you've got to have it there, haven't you? Otherwise, it's not gonna work, isn't
it? Yeah. And if you do force yourself, normally the stuff you produce is absolutely rubbish. So, and then if not, I just do admin or anything. But yeah, I try and come in like 9 to 5 most days. Good. Just so I don't feel guilty.
Where I grew up in Dagenham, we did have a large Olympic-sized swimming pool. I mean, it was just a recreational pool, you know.
Yeah.
It had the yellow end, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember going to school one morning, and I can't remember how old I was. And we had to walk past the swimming pool, and I remember walking along, and this woman went, excuse me, and I've looked around, and it was this, bearing in mind, I was 13, 14, it was this beautiful, blonde-haired, athletic woman. Well, I wasn't thinking athletic at the time.
Yeah, you're just beautiful.
Yeah, she asked me the time, and I went, I just went, I don't know. I didn't have a watch. And then she went, oh, thank you, and walked away. And it was Sharon Davis.
Oh, no way.
But I don't know what she was doing there, because where I lived wasn't, I don't know, maybe it was a promotional thing, but who knows?
Yeah.
But it was sort of like, it was possibly 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
I remember her just coming up to me, talking. I recognised who it was, because she was, at that time, she was massive, you know. No, I just remember seeing her and like falling in love as she walked away, you know.
She's really cool. We've got some really great female swimmers, and yeah, Sharon Davis is definitely up there. So you've met quite a famous, like, a famous swimmer, that's for sure.
And you've mentioned about the other art fair that's coming up in the start of March.
Yeah.
You're going to have a fantastic time, irrelevant of sales. Mm. Whether you make your fortune or walk away without a sale, you will love the experience without question, and you will want to do it again. What else have you got coming up other than the other art fair?
Yeah, so I've got a collaboration with WWF coming up on Earth Day in March. Can't really speak on the details as of yet, but it's sort of more of a social media collab, which is super exciting. So this year's goal was kind of to do more stuff based in the sort of wildlife sector. I've got that. I've got other sort of things in the works, but nothing down on paper as of yet. And I definitely want to get a solo show done at the end of the year. Other than that, like, pretty just got some quite big projects, but nothing exciting for the public other than those couple of things. I'm awful. I'm kind of like a bit of a recluse in my studio, and I'm like, this year was like, right, I'm gonna do some more stuff with charity and have more physical things. So yeah, I'm hoping by the end of the year we'll have a show on. I might do it in Leicester, just because most of my I've got so much support in Leicester, it'd be nice to do the first one here. I know it's not London, and it's not that.
Nowadays, an exhibition is online. No matter where it's physically held, people are going to see it online, and that's where the majority of people will view it. You're a Leicester girl. You've lived there, grown up there. It's made you. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's so nice because the network is so supportive as well, just even the business network. And it's like, I know it's not like the art hub of the country, but just to show my graciousness and just thank you for the support. Like, here's a big show, like, enjoy, sort of thing. And I could do another one elsewhere, the next one. And yeah, it'll be a great practice run as well. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, at the end of the year, that's the plan. I've got so much painting to do. I need to get on it.
And where can people see your work, be it online or social media?
Yeah, my Instagram's my biggest. I'm always active on there. So Danielle Tomlinson Art, just my name. And then sort of the same for TikTok, same for LinkedIn. Yeah, but Instagram's the one to go to. So.
Well, Danielle, that is all of my questions asked. Enjoy that other art fair. You will.
Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully I'll see you there.
I hope so.
All right, Danielle, see you.
See you later on.
Bye-bye. Cheers.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's a podcast that's produced with the help of the listener. And if you like what you've heard and you think you might be able to give a little support, there's two ways in which you can do it. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, you'll find a Linktree drop-down box. And in that box, you'll find two links. One is called Buy Us a Coffee, and it's pretty much that. You can make a one-off payment, the price of a cup of coffee. Or, if you're able and want to do it more long-term, you can become a Ministry of Arts Patreon, where you can sign up to support us on a monthly basis, and 100% of your support goes back into the podcast. And if you're not able to do that, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. But we would urge you to follow us on your socials and show us a bit of love that way. Either way, thanks for listening and see you next time. Ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.